Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you're listening to The Unknown Show. I'm your host, Bud Smith. Today on the show, we have Jade DeSalvo from Bicycle Review, Jesse Bradley, author of Bones of Us. So hang around. That's enough of that. Okay, it's another Thursday. I almost said Tuesday there. I do the show usually on Tuesdays, but it's a happy Thursday night. I hope everybody's doing good out there. Things are good here in New York City. It's getting pretty springy out there, spring weather. First on the show, we'll get right into it. We're going to talk to Jade DeSalvo of Bicycle Review and Pedestrian Press, and here he is right now. Jay, how you doing?
I'm doing well, bud. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Nice to finally talk to you. What are you up to tonight?
Tonight we're actually we're working on putting together the next issue, which is coming out on the 15th, but we have to get it ready and, you know, to get printed and everything.
Yeah. Bicycle Review you're talking about?
Bicycle Review number 27. I actually have been taking a break to focus more on the press side of things. My editors, Michael McCormick and Rhea Audrey, have been putting this one together, but I've kind of like helped see them through with the layout and so forth. So we're going to be working on that after I get through this.
Very cool. It's always great to get the new thing together, you know. I know the feeling. I got a crunch time on it, right? So,
Done.
Yeah, it's good to have it done. Where are you calling from?
Oakland, California. West Oakland, like one subway stop away from San Francisco.
Yeah. How do you like Oakland? You lived there a long time?
I've lived here off and on since the mid-90s. I was staying in San Francisco before this, and I love San Francisco. I love the East Bay, too. Very expensive there, though. So I ended up coming out here so as to have, you know, a private studio and a backyard and stuff like that, stuff I couldn't afford in San Francisco. So it's been working out well for that.
Oh, yeah. That's the same, but, you know, boat on, man. I'm in New York City, but I'm way uptown, you know. I might as well be in New Jersey or the Bronx or something.
Right.
Technically, I'm in Manhattan, but it's great. You know, you enjoy enjoy being close to the stuff. But like you said, you have a backyard and you can kick around a little more than I'm sure when you were living in San Francisco.
Definitely.
It seems like it keeps picking up more and more fans of Oakland. I keep hearing about Oakland, and I guess it's mostly from Paul Corman Roberts. He's got that Beast Crawl out there. Have you made it to any of those things?
I featured at, the Crawl of Fame last year for the Beast Crawl at the Spice Monkey, and I'm going to be doing something this year. Still, I'm either going to be curating an event, or if not that, then I'm going to be reading somewhere, I'm sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, Paul is great guy, organizes a lot of the events. I just took over, actually, an event for him at the Milonga Center for the Arts for First Fridays for the Art Walk here in Oakland. And yesterday we had the hat party, which was a fundraiser for the Beast Crawl. Everyone went down to Telegraph Beer Garden wearing funny hats and raising money for the Beast Crawl. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm curious about Pedestrian Press. You want to tell me a little bit more about what's going on with that? I haven't heard much about it, just my own ignorance. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing with that?
No worries. Plan with Bicycle Review when we started was always to eventually also print books. So it's been about a year now that we've been doing that. We have five titles out.
Mm-hmm.
just printed a book of short stories by A.D. Winans, who's really well known as a poet, but this is his first published book of short stories ever, even though he's 78. In the Pink. We got a lot of attention for that because the title got banned from Amazon because the cover, they considered it obscene or something, so they suppressed it. And we just put out a book. Funny you mention New Jersey. We just put out the great Newark, New Jersey novel, The Flowers Won't Die by S.J. Cruz, which kind of deals with the sort of situation you're talking about, someone who's he's actually from Manhattan, but kind of got priced out of his own neighborhood there in Alphabet City. So he wrote a novel about Newark, New Jersey, which is not something that happens often, but it's a great book.
That's great. I like Newark myself. The Ironbound there is great. I don't know if if he winds up living in the Ironbound in that book. It's like a big Portuguese neighborhood.
A good part of it takes place there. Yeah.
Very cool. So that's cool. It seems getting rolling, getting deeper and deeper into putting out print books. What's forthcoming? What's coming out next?
Our next book is a book of poetry by Gregory T. Farnham that's going to be coming out probably within a month or two. I'm just finishing up the final edits this weekend, and then we'll see, sending it back and forth how long it takes. It's called Helping Hands of the Locust People. Kind of experimental avant-garde stuff. Very cool stuff. One of the poems, You May Already Be a Winner, is on the Bicycle Review on the Poem of the Week page, if anyone wants to check that out. But that's the next thing. And then we're doing, this summer, we're doing a book by Gerald Yell, Mark My Word in the New World Order of Flash Fiction and Poetry, and a nonfiction book by a guy named Jay Durrett, Notes from San Francisco, which is about East Coasters' experience moving to San Francisco and adapting to West Coast life.
Yeah, the whole West Coast life thing is very alien to me. I've been out there myself quite a few times, Bay Area, Southern California, and I can relate to that a little bit. How often have you made it out here? Are you East Coast guy? In your heart, too?
My family is from there. People always think that I'm from New York or something. I guess I have a slight Jewish accent or something. But, everyone always thinks I'm, everyone from California always thinks that I'm from there. New York, I'm sure most of the people in San Francisco and L.A. where I'm originally from are not from there. They just, have adopted it as their home city. I lived in Philadelphia. For a while, and I have lots of friends in New York. I've been out there, not as much as I'd like to, for economic reasons, but I'll be back and doing some readings out there eventually, I'm sure. So
cool. Oh yeah, you can't beat that. Philly's a great town too. I don't get the city vibe too much for Philly. I definitely get like South Street area. I've mostly gone there.
Right.
Bands playing. It's like you can sneak away when I lived in Jersey, you could sneak away and see a band in Philly and it would be a lot easier to get in and out, and you'd see a better, smaller show than if you tried to fight your way up to the city. So I have a lot of music memories of going to Philly.
Sure, probably cheaper to see shows there as well.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool to have you on the show. We've been talking a lot about what you do for other people, publishing, Bicycle Review, doing print with Pedestrian Press. So I'm curious if I can get you to read some of your own stuff.
Sure. Yeah, actually, I should. Robert will be mad at me if I don't plug this. I just had a book of poetry, Selected Poems, 2002 to 2013, that came out on Leaf Garden Press.
Cool.
And it's called End of Ambition. If anybody wants to download it for free, it's available pay what you will on Smashwood, so you can download the ebook version for free, or pay if you wish, whatever you'd like to donate to Leaf Garden Press, which is a great nonprofit press. The print book is also available on Amazon and CreateSpace for basically the lowest we can possibly charge. the title poem from that book, The End of Ambition, has been printed in textbooks in India and stuff. It's probably the piece I'm most well known for. My next collection actually is going to be called Downhill From Here. So The End of Ambition and then Downhill From Here kind of follows it up. This is the title poem. I'm going to read, you said, prepare about 10 minutes, so I've got one pretty short poem and a short piece of prose.
Yeah, whatever you like, man. You don't have to stick to the 10 minutes. Don't feel, you know, that's not a real thing. It's just a, you know, an idea. So go for it.
All right. Well, this should come in at about that.
Great.
The poem is Downhill From Here. It's kind of almost a response to the title piece, like some kind of schizophrenic arguing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The first line has a pun, which no one will get if I don't explain it. It's just a reference to The End of Ambition, which is title poem of the last book, and this is Downhill From Here. Now that we've done with our bitchin', let's get serious about it. Serious? Poetry? Are you serious? Poet? Metaphor? Doesn't tickle like it used to. Tell the truth, it was never so very felt. Did that make it all better? Let's rephrase and get to the point. Peace, if not for you all, at least once for myself. The selfish years, the blind disgust with all of you, I can hardly wait. Slip, go downhill from here, Jack, Jill, senility, oh yeah. That success, crave its idiom, that sucker, Socratic idiot, I won't entertain necessary lies, I matter, I'm important, look, let me explain to you why I, and only I, am I. I'll take the fall, guy like me, Patsy-like. Can't wait to become too stupid, to know or to care, it's no fun, but there is a harmless impressive, no better, no worse, and knows it, knows better until, can't be certain if it's known, that time will come, but not just when. So damn full of facts, we get so used to being sure of the rules by which we measure sanity, I want not to go insane, but to forget forever, to make an issue of my sanity, my common functionality. Forget this standard as any kind of plus or minus. Great, we learned, let's get the fuck on with it. An absorption, maybe a new trick we don't have to learn to compete, or not anymore. I might less proud of our children.
Holy fuck, it's really something else, man. What's the name of that poem?
Yeah, it's Downhill From Here. Like a lot of my poems, it's kind of formal. I usually do a lot of poems that are either entirely free form, or else I try to stick to like a certain number of syllables, a certain number of lines per stanza, and that's one of those.
Yeah.
Kind of a mathematical thing going on there.
It's pretty cool to hear you say that, that you actually break the poem down. So it is written in free form, but you've actually broken it down so you know it's in a meter. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's in a meter. You know, I like a lot of older stuff, and, you know, it's sort of an attempt to have some kind of form and structure without just doing, you know, endless, like, villanelles or whatever, you know, stuff that's been done so many times that, you know, there's really nothing more you can do with it. But then yet also to have, some meter and some form to it.
Yeah. Which is something, yeah, I'd say about that. I could almost hear program drums behind that or something like that, keeping pace, which was cool.
Sure, thanks.
So you're going to read some prose then?
Yeah, this is a, I guess you'd call it a second-person philosophical flash fiction.
Cool.
And it's called You Buy the Book You Want to Read. And so you read it. Maybe you like it and maybe you don't. You usually finish it, though. You paid for it, after all. Then it goes up on the shelf and it becomes just one more thing in your house. And even if you live with clutter, it doesn't seem to stop you from seeing each individual thing one by one from time to time. So every now and then you see it. And aside from that, you don't think about it very much anymore unless something reminds you to. At some point, someone says something, and it reminds you of some line or phrase that you read in the book. If the line of phrase spoken is close enough to the line of phrase written, you may think to yourself, or if you've been drinking, say out loud, that this person has probably read the book. That's where they got it from, you'll think or say, and if you are in a certain kind of mood, you will think or say it without a knowing smile, as should be the case, being as you yourself must certainly have read it there first. It's not often that anyone has a really original thought. Against your better judgment, had you been capable of it, which, for some unknowable reason, you are not at this time on this date, you, if only for a short time, look down on that person. You think of this later, and it bothers you. How could you be so snide? Do you covet trivia so ardently? Do you wish to hoard witty sayings and keep them all for your own use? In your own defense, you say, ostensibly to yourself, but really to others, to ideas, morals, judgments, arguments, none of which have any meaning, to you and you alone, by yourself, on your own time, you can pretty much do what you want. You say, well, they might have attributed it. You know this doesn't really work. It isn't really fair. It doesn't pass the test. It's not a sound argument, more of a straw man. Who hasn't been guilty, at one time or another, perhaps unconsciously, of lifting something witty from somebody else without bothering to attribute it, or even to remember where it came from in the first place? You're certain you've done it yourself, many times. And that's not all. After all the scrutiny you've subjected this little witticism to, it starts to seem less and less witty. Suddenly you see a number of ways in which this line or phrase is, apart from not being quite so witty as you had previously given it credit for being, on top of it all, bad advice, if not altogether wrong, in more instances than you can think to stop to count. This realization tarnishes, makes you question deeply, the line or phrase, and by extension, the book itself. Down it comes from the shelf, and once again it is a force in your life, no longer just a thing in your house. This is all very well, but by this point you're so steeped in doubt that you objectively doubt your ability to make an objective examination. The paradox that's evident within the confines of this realization itself is paralyzing, and so it becomes apparent you don't know what you should think or what you should do. You certainly don't feel like rereading the thing, as you're calling it now, to diminish its presence, to take back some of its power over you. Not now you don't, and not anytime soon either. Not so far as you can see. And if you're completely honest with yourself, at this moment, you even feel a distaste, bordering on revulsion, for the book. But you don't throw it away. You paid for it, after all. You figure you won't get very much for it at the used bookstore, so it's hardly worth the money and or time and or effort to take the train or ride the bus or drive or walk or whatever the case may be, unless you live very close to the used bookstore, in which event, lucky you. There aren't very many used bookstores left, and before you know it, there will be even fewer, so enjoy it while it lasts. But oh my, no. You don't throw it away. Dazed, and if I may say so, confused, you give up and decide to just put it back on the shelf, where up until quite recently it seemed to belong. As you do so, your eye begins to scan the other titles on your shelf. If this one isn't any good, can the others be just as bad? Have you gotten older? Changed your tastes? Maybe you will get rid of some of these. The shelf is too packed. There's no room for anything new. So you lay all the books out on the floor of your living room, or study, or studio apartment, or rented room, as the case may be. You've ceased to have any faith in the virtue of sentence-by-sentence analysis. If you've learned anything so far from all this, it's that a sentence can be both beautifully written and of dubious merit. You ask yourself just what it is that each of these books is trying to say. What are the main themes? What arguments, propositions, in support of which ideas or values are contained in the text? Who are the most complete characters, and why do they stand out so much? Do they represent something you think is true, false, or are they just great types or great originals? Is it their pure personality that you admire, or don't you? You look at the books you have bought over the years, and as you size them up for potential unloading for anywhere from 50 cents to $5 on the open market, you can't help but notice how ugly some of them are. The author's names are spelled out in bold, ridiculously large capital letters on the front jacket, so big they fill the entire bottom half of the front cover. The author's pictures are plastered across the back covers, covering nearly all the space. The authors are smiling like greasy pitchmen, and underneath their pictures, and on the front covers, and sometimes even for pages and pages inside the books before the stories even start, and then again in the back of the books you often find yet more pages of them, praising the author's other works, are these snappy little quotes that are basically telling you that the authors are to contemporary literature as sliced bread is to contemporary lunch. And it all seems disingenuous, shifty, salesman-like, and, if I may, phony. Some of the authors are dead, actually, so you can't blame them, but doesn't anyone have any respect? And as for the ones who are living, you have to wonder if they have any control over this sort of thing, and if so, why wouldn't they do something about it? From here on, you decide that you will only buy nice-looking books, whose covers treat literature with the respect it deserves, and not as just another commodity of advanced capitalism. After you make this declaration, it strikes you that this might be just a little too snobby an attitude for your taste. And now that you've finally got some idea again what this taste of yours might consist of, you feel better. You put the books back on the shelves. You remember. It's really very simple. You buy the book you want to read. All you need now is another shelf.
Fucking awesome. Reminds me of Adaptation or something, Charlie Kaufman style. Very cool. Very cool. So.
Oh, thanks so much, bud.
Yeah. What? Now you're talking about readings. Talking about things coming up. What's going on reading wise in Oakland area or beyond for you?
Tomorrow at the Malanga, you know, every first Friday, we have an art walk. It's called Art Murmur here in Oakland. There's a lot of events going on all around downtown. One of those is we're going to have A Razor, Cassandra Ballett, and William Taylor Jr. They'll be reading at the Malanga Castleward Center for the Arts at 14th and Alice in downtown Oakland. I'll be hosting that.
Wow.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's great.
Yeah, good lineup. I think that's what you were reacting to.
yeah, most definitely. I'm surprised to hear you rattle off those exact names in that order. That's wonderful. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be a great reading. Razor actually may be, he's the one of the founders of Punk Hostage Press, for those who aren't familiar, a great small press out of L.A. and also up here. Some great books by people like Joel Landmine and A.D. Wyman's, who we also have a book out by, S.A. Griffin, S.B. Stokes, all kinds of folks, really good catalog. He actually may be having to head back to L.A. He's having a little trouble finding work up here, so we wanted to get him in to do one more reading before he heads back down there, if that ends up being the case.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, that sounds like it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, should be really good. We also have music by a guy named David Pulley, I think like instrumental guitar music to start off the evening. There's going to be wine and snacks for donation, whatever, you know, the event's free. Really, really solid lineup. So if you're in the Bay, I definitely encourage anyone listening to come check it out tomorrow night.
Well, very cool. I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show, and thanks for reading those great poem and that second-person short story. That was pretty awesome. I hope,
thank you,
I hope to talk to you again soon, man. I really do.
Definitely. All right. Well, good luck with everything you're doing, and have a great rest of the show.
All right. Party on, Jay. Catch you later. All right. So that was Jay DeSalvo, Bicycle Press, Pedestrian Press, and he's got some. It sounds like he's got some great titles of his own. So seek out his work and pay attention. Also, anybody in Oakland area, I mean, Jesus, I hope you go out there and see that a great batch of readers he's talking about tomorrow. A Razor's a hell of a reader himself. He was just on the show recently. And, yeah, so that's cool. Next on the show, Jesse Bradley. Jesse, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
How you doing? What's up?
Doing good, man. I wanted to say I really enjoy Tollbooth, by the way. That was a fun novel.
Oh, thanks, man. That's kind of you to say. You know, it's weird. You know, you write a book and then you hear people talk about it after the fact. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. I saw that fucking book. Yeah, it's really cool. Really cool to have you on. I didn't get to catch up with the AWP. What else is new? I'm scatterbrained like everybody else. But you have a new book from Yes Yes out, Bones of Us. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
The Bones of Us is a graphic poetry collection that is about the death of a relationship, a death of a marriage, really. And kind of what happens after that death. So kind of a whole kind of a grief arc, so to speak. The art is done by Adam Scott Mazur, who's a Brooklyn-based artist. He's also a playwright. His play, The Tower, that he wrote, starts on April 12th. It's in Brooklyn through Antimatter Collective. I mean, the guy is an amazing artist. And he's a playwright, and I'm just going, what can't this guy do?
Yeah. Aren't some people just like that? You're like, damn, you know, sometimes I feel like that I can barely roll out of bed without, you know, knocking everything on my nightstand over. I think about, oh, Jesus, this guy's doing
right.
Plays, drawing. That's fantastic. But, yeah, I mean, I'm really psyched, actually, about your book because you're talking about the subject matter is, like, dark, and I think the some of the illustrations are kind of a little more playful than you would assume for the subject matter. It's kind of really got a great juxtaposition to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say some of the images definitely are playful, and then there are some that are you're just going, oh, wow, he interpreted it like that. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's the other side of the coin. I didn't even think of that. You're talking about what actually comes into play when somebody is interpreting your idea and what you even meant from a scene and illustrating it. Is this your first time working with an illustrator?
I've had my work adapted by folks. Nathan Hollick, he's a writer and also does comic book stuff, more literary than anything else. He teaches at UCF in the MFA program. But he adapted one of my flash fiction pieces called Just Do It, which is about a kid who is inspired by the Simpsons episode where a guy who dressed like Marge Simpson does cocaine off the blade of a knife. So he's basically practicing doing coke off a blade of a knife, but with different things. And he adapted that, and it was really fun. Bob Schofield, he has this thing on Tumblr where if you submit a piece, he'll illustrate it. And it wasn't so much; it was more like a piece of art inspired by the piece I sent over to him. And it was great. It was a great interpretation. I'm really excited about his book coming out through the New York Press, who just did an amazing one of the most elaborate April Fool's hoaxes I have ever witnessed in my life, that we were all fooled. And when the big reveal was that they weren't actually being sued by the New Yorkers, like, damn, we all got trolled.
Oh. Yeah, I know. I saw that when that came out. That came out the day after I had submitted something to them for the first time, you know. I had like a weird little flash fiction thing, and I submitted to them. And then the next day I saw that they were potentially getting a cease and desist, and I'm like, what a fucking figures, you know. At least, you know, stick around long enough so I can, you know, get a rejection letter from you guys, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that badass, you know, that's an awesome April Fool's sort of gag.
So, but this is the first time that I have ever had an art. So the whole book, the whole concept of doing it illustrated, it was the publisher's idea when they took the book in 2011. It was early on in Yes Yes existence. I was helping them book a show in Orlando for their first author, and what was great was and also that year my manuscript was a Right Bloody finalist, and I mentioned that, and publisher, they weren't looking at books at the time, but she told me to go ahead and send it to her, and then 20 minutes later she asked if she can call me, and it was Cam A. Sullivan, the publisher, and who's also an excellent poet as well. And she goes, I really want to turn this into a graphic poetry collection. Are you okay with this? And I like doing interesting things with poetry. And I was down. I was absolutely down for it. And then she goes, well, we're going to fuck this manuscript up. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it took a couple of years. It really did. We didn't find Adam until 2013 through Dolan Morgan. Dolan had a piece in The Lifted Brow that Adam did one of the four art interpretations of it, and then he sent a couple of poems based on what the publisher sent, and we realized this was our guy. And
awesome.
How it worked was the poems that were good as is, we sent to Adam, and Adam created his interpretation. Poems that needed to be stronger, after, because as Adam created, my publisher realized, based on the direction of the art, going, yeah, we need to make some of the work stronger, and she provided some additional edits that I was at the point with the manuscript that it was just about my divorce. And
yes.
And about after, and I was emotionally invested in the manuscript, and I needed someone who was disconnected to go, we really should be doing this instead, we should be doing that instead, and it made the book that much stronger. I'm really, really proud of the product that we've put out.
Well, that's the hell of a thing to be able to say, because I know a lot of times it's hard for an author to legitimately be proud of what comes out when they work with a publisher. You know, you get the book and you're excited about it and you look at it and maybe you're excited for a few days and then you go, that's a beautiful thing then. You can say that you really are fucking totally happy.
Yeah, well, it was more like I was excited for about a few hours after holding it and then the reality, then the reality of, yep, time to get this thing out there, time to get this thing promoted, all of that.
All the things.
The unique hell that is being an author, an independent literature author. I mean, it's a fun hell, but sometimes it's a hell.
Oh, I got to say, it sounds like you're pretty much are only doing fun things, whether or not, I don't know if that's true or not. It seems that way. I'd love to pry some poems out of you. I don't know if you're down for that. Will you read some stuff?
Absolutely. All right, let me... That's my cat in the background. She gets jealous when I'm on the phone.
I'm watching cat right now for a friend, so...
It's like, pet me. Okay. This is... Immunosuppression. There are organs missing in this apartment. The plaque of paintings and prints slip clean from walls like arteries, while the nailheads wish they had palms to cover their baldness. I cannot repair the malpractice of farewell. Only wear towels like smocks to clean up the pool of hangers on the carpet without risk of infection. The closet is a throat. It forgets the word might.
Will you read some additional poetry?
Oh, no, I am. I just want to let that kind of pause for a moment while I was going through getting the next one ready.
Well, that's good that you put a pause in there, because I'm living here in New York, and there's no pauses here. It was one of the first pauses I've experienced in weeks. I loved it.
Wait, what was it?
I love that pause, because everything here is fucking nonstop and loud, so...
Yeah, I think, and before I read the next poem, I think pauses in poetry are very important because, especially when you're performing, you need to let the listener process what they've just heard. And I like doing that. I'm a big fan of I think stanzas are very important. White space is very important. I have my own, depending on the poem, like I have a hard time reading poems that are long that don't have any stanza breaks, whatsoever, because there's no breath, there's no way for the reader to take a breath when reading that particular poem.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay, marooned. There's a quiet dignity drowning alone in the adult swim of mixed drinks. No bar tab requiring the sacrifice of a credit card. No jukeboxes playing for the deaf. No doors coughing you out like nicotine jerky after last call. Alone, you are Poseidon. You'll pick the Spanish galleon of last night from your throat without searching for snipped strings slumping from your wrist, ankles, or jaw. Collection.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, you're going to read another one? Please read another one.
I was going to read another one. Yeah, I was going to read another one, but you know, if you want to, feel free to ask me a question before I do.
Well, my question was about your the reading series you're doing in Orlando. There Will Be Words, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Well, what's the general deal with that? When do you have in this thing, and where is it, and blah blah blah, you know, all that stuff.
So There Will Be Words. It's a prose only reading series. So the reason why it's prose only is so I ran a poetry slam for 10 years, and towards the end of the run I got burnt out, and I actually went to AWP for the first time in 2011, and after going to a lot of national poetry slams and then going to one AWP, I go, holy shit, there's all of these amazing writers, and they're also really nice people, and I wanted to be a little more involved in that. Orlando had, at that point, plenty of poetry open mics, but nothing that was really focused on prose, so
yeah.
I started in conjunction with a local press here called Borough Press, who they put out really good books. I pitched the idea to them at the venue they were in at the time, and they ran with it and started the series in 2011. We celebrate our third birthday next month. So it's prose only. It's four writers from various walks of life that read original work. Think of it as a living, breathing literary magazine where you actually have to submit work to be considered, or if you're an established writer, I have to look at your samples to look at your site or something to go, okay, you would be a good fit for this particular show. We're not beholden to any sort of school of writing. It doesn't matter whether you have an MFA. It doesn't even matter whether you have a degree. As long as the writing is good, that's what we're looking for. We're the second Tuesday of every month over at the venue's called the Gallery at Avalon Island. We actually start around 7 o'clock because it's a Tuesday, and we only last for about an hour. I don't want to beat people to death with literature because you can only handle so much literature before you're going, oh, God, shut the fuck up. I just want to watch some wrestling at this point. So I've been doing that for a while, and also we've been producing – my fiancé, we used to produce chapbooks to sell – but Borough pulled out because of the cost, the time and the effort and the cost. My fiance figured out a way to get the chapbooks back, figuring out a balance between cost and quality. So we also publish what the writers are reading, and we sell the limited edition chapbooks at the show. In the hopes that we sell enough that we can actually pay the writers for their time.
Wow, that's badass.
We're actually producing a solo chapbook for the first time next month. We had our best of show is decided by votes by the public, and we offered the winner, whoever got the most votes in the final round of voting, we are going to produce a solo chapbook of their work.
Cool.
So Susan Lilly is her name, and her chapbook is called When We Were Stardust, and super excited that we're producing her work. So
that's a hell of a thing. All right, so that's that. Makes me wish I was down there in Orlando. Sounds cool. My parents go down there every year for Disney World. So
well, if you know in advance that you're going to be here, and it's going to be close to the second Tuesday that you'll actually be here on the second Tuesday of the month, I'll hook you up.
Cool, man. Sounds like a good time. Now, speaking of hooking up, hook me up. Read me a couple more poems, please.
All right. This is Collection. When I hear jewelry commercials on the radio say it's engagement season, I imagine restaurants scattered across meadows where young men grind themselves on bended knee. I want to wield doubt like a hatchet, scout the blustering grooms who rehearse in front of bathroom mirrors, gut their smiles with, "You will not find the future in the train of her wedding dress." Tourism. As my friend pulls me away from the woman with coloring book arms, all I think is, I love being in art galleries. I've explored rural museums, butterflies pinned on lower backs, the outsider exhibition mused by a halo of broken bottles, the peel of bandages, a lonely ribbon-cutting ceremony. I fold memories like a program, tear them into pieces, feed lovers the reproductions of spoiled canvases and hands. I'll tell them they need no totems for me to lose myself in their wings and halt. Cosmonaut. The house is a pulmonary system of pocket universes. We lose ourselves in the vacuum of auto-tune, drift toward the outer rims of conversations and plastic Dixie cups. Bottles of banker's gin collapse like white dwarves in our throats. In the morning, we will smack our lips, ruin the cotton in our cheeks. Our heads are capsules with cracks in the seams. The lesson there is don't drink liquor ever from a plastic bottle.
I could definitely attest to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it usually has like a really great name too, you know. Boomerang Vodka. It's like their tagline is it always comes back. It's like, you know,
right.
Oh shit. And a big plastic jug.
When it's a plastic handle of it's just a plastic handle of
We were recently
liquor.
At a bar. We were at a bar downtown. And my wife ordered a Bloody Mary, right? She asked for tequila in it, something like a Bloody Maria or whatever they call it. And I'm watching the bartender. He, like, turns me, like, it's this giant jug of plastic tequila. I'm like, man, don't do that.
Like, that's just a bad mistake.
Yeah,
that's
middle
just,
of
like,
the afternoon, plastic jug tequila. But,
Ooh.
Cool.
Well, that's some scary shit, man.
I want to thank you for coming on. Fucking, it's always good. It's always good to hear from you. I think this is like your second time on the show, and I can't wait to drag you back on again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Lord above willing. So, best of luck with the new book, Bones of Us. Yes, yes, books, and people out there listening in Radio Land, check that out. Illustrated and. All that fine stuff. So have a nice night there, Mr. Jesse Bradley.
Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, fucking welcome. And that's going to be the show for tonight. I want to thank both guests, David Salvo, Bicycle Review, and Jesse Bradley. It was cool. It was a good Thursday night here. I'm getting like a little spring fever going on, you know. I can't wait to get the fuck out of my house and go stumble down cobblestone streets and whatnot. Alright, so next Thursday I'm going to be back on the show. It's not going to be a Tuesday show next week. It's going to be a Thursday show again, and we're going to have Robin Vaughn is going to be on the show, and Michael Dix is going to come on and Kurt Bledsoe. So it's going to be a good time. So everybody have a good week and take care.